I love being here. I grew up here in San Diego, went to Patrick Henry High School, grew up in San Carlos, used to come up here to the arcade and play. And I dreamed about playing football here. That was my dream when I was young. I grew up with a single mom, six kids. Actually got recruited here. I was all CIF in San Diego, but for some reason, they thought I was a little too small, slow, not talented enough. So I ended up playing football in Los Angeles in Division III because I love sports. And I have a lesson about lessons. I was one of those people that took a lot of notes. Anybody here like write down everything in your classes? Yeah, I was that guy. And I ended up with a $1,200 bill every month. I'm 56 years old now. Every month I pay $1,200 for a storage unit that's filled with boxes of notes from college, law school, business school, Bob Proctor, Tony Robbins, Jack Canfield, the millions of dollars I've spent on education, personal development. They're all sitting in boxes and I can't use any of it. And so one of the best lessons I wish somebody would have taught me when I was your age is don't write down everything, but also don't write down nothing. There's a secret that I've learned through all these years about what's important. And what's important is what resonates with you. And initially I thought I'd hear somebody say a quote and I'd text it to myself because it resonated. One of my favorite quotes in the world is, "You're either humble or you're about to be." I heard that the first time, all the hairs on my arm stood up. I'm like texting myself, can't forget that. Create a system to access all those things. And then even later, I found that even more valuable than the things that resonate with me, that make the hair stand up on my arms, are the things that I disagree with most. So, you know, when someone says something really stupid and it aggravates me or pisses me off, I write that down too. And I do research to figure out why does what somebody else think or somebody else say upset me so much? There must be something important in there. There must be something to learn. And so before I get started, I always like to tell people the best lesson is about how we receive lessons and what to do with them. So if something resonates with you, agree with strongly or disagree with strongly, capture it. Put it in a folder, make it searchable, and then use it. Attach stories to it. I'm going to talk about my journey because I know in these type of audiences, you're probably curious, how the hell were you a sports agent? I ran the most notable sports marketing company. I have a sports media company now. I work with the biggest names in sports and entertainment, billionaires, millionaires, entrepreneurs, celebrities, athletes, and entertainers. Everyone from Warren Moon, Troy Aikman, Steve Young, Evander Holyfield, Lennox Lewis, to Austin Eckler, Michael Chandler, who just lost on Saturday, do so many different things in sports. But to be honest, that's not really what I wanted to be. I wanted to be a football player. When I was young, I had a mom, probably like some of you. My mom's favorite thing, we had six kids, a single mom. My mom was a second grade teacher, packed my dinner in a paper bag. We lived sometimes on food stamps. And she'd fill up turnstiles at 7-Elevens, convenience stores with greeting cards, just so we could eat. So all I wanted to be when I was young was rich. Anybody here want to be rich? It's okay, don't be afraid. Oh, good. Yes, rich is good. I've been rich, I've been poor. Rich is much better. It's that simple. Write that down. it's true, though. But I just wanted to be rich, but for a simple reason. Only time I wasn't happy, I had this awesome mom, these incredible siblings, four brothers and a sister, super happy. But the only time I wasn't happy was when I didn't have enough money for something, right? The car broke down, the dishwasher. We didn't have money for food sometimes. I couldn't go to summer camp. I couldn't go on my senior trip. And I catch my mom crying. So I said to myself, no matter what, I just want to make money. I want to buy my mom a house. I want to buy my mom a car. And I never wanted to worry about money. And so everything in my young life was driven to how much money I could make. Now, I told you, I got to play college football and nobody ever thought I would. I always think there's this big gap between knowing who you are, what I am, and what I want people to think I am. But I remember lining up. I was the fastest one on my college football team, also the smallest, So I lined up as a bullet on the kickoff team. And my freshman year, I thought, okay, I'm going to show everyone. This is it, the start of my NFL career. I fly down the field. Of course, I get there first. And I light up the ball carrier right into his, and I just light him up. And I'm thinking, yes. Next thing I'm thinking is, oh, no. I'm literally flying backwards onto my back. And the carrier stepped on my chest and kept on running. And I remember thinking my mom's favorite line growing up, doctor, lawyer, or failure. That's all I could think of as a laying there. Shit, I'm going to have to go to med school or law school. This is not going to work out. At least to buy my mom a house and a car. It wasn't going to be through football. So this is probably one of the best pieces of advice. So I decide at the end of the football season, I better go visit my older brother who's in med school because I want to go to med school and be a doctor, be rich, buy my mom a house. I show up at the hospital at UCLA and I saw my brother and he said, what's the matter, David? I said, I just hate hospitals. I'm 18 years old. Anybody in here 18? There you go. So you know what it's like. I'm 18 years old and I look at my brother. I'm like, I hate hospitals. He's like, you know, you want to be a doctor, you're going to have to be in a hospital. I was so stupid at 18. I was like, no, I'm not going to be a hospital doctor. I'm going to be a sports doctor. I'll be on the sidelines and locker rooms. I'm not going to be in a hospital. And he looked at me like, you may be the biggest idiot I've ever met. But he, at that time, he gave me the best advice that I use closing out a lot of my TV shows, digital shows, my podcast. He said, David, you need to be more interested than interesting. You need to be more interested than interesting. And I've lived my life being more interested, learning about everything, the things that I hate, the things I don't like, the things that you say that I hate, the things that you say that I do like. I'm more interested than anyone. I don't let it go. I'm not here to be interesting to you. I'm here to inspire you to be interested, to utilize your skills, your knowledge, and your desire to improve, to pursue your potential. What got me to where I am today is I continually develop my skills, my knowledge of who and what, and my desire. I believe the common denominator of all those billionaires, millionaires, entrepreneurs, celebrities, athletes, and entertainers, one common denominator, they have a desire that they must be what they can be. If you don't have a desire that you must be what you can be, then surround yourself with different people and different ideas. That's the only thing standing in your way. You're either limited by the meaning of your past that you give it, the lessons, the mistakes, failures, and setbacks, and you're going to hear some pretty big mistakes, failures, and setbacks in my life. You're only limited by the meaning you give it, and you can give meaning to anything you see. You give meaning to it, nobody else. And you're also limited by your imagination, your own self-image. I've never met one person in my life that overachieved their own self-image. So if you don't feel worthy, if you feel like shit, if you don't think you're good enough, I promise you, you won't overachieve that. I'm here to tell you, you are. You are worthy. And keep on expanding your skills, your knowledge, and your desire, and you will achieve things you never dreamed of. I'm the chairman of Napoleon Hill Institute. Anyone ever hear of a book, Think and Grow Rich? If you haven't read Think and Grow Rich, please do. Change my life. It's an amazing book. Over 500 million copies of Think and Grow Rich, written in 1937. It will change your life. It says what you can conceive, you can achieve. And that's what I took as I decided I'm not going to be a doctor. I decided to be a lawyer. And I wasn't going to be a sports lawyer. I love sports. I would have loved to be a sports lawyer. But it didn't pay back then. It didn't pay. So I did my research and I found out what graduates from law school made the most money. It was in oil and gas. Oil and gas litigators. Working for the big oil companies, you make a ton of money. So I went to the leading law school for oil and gas, which, by the way, today is the leading law school for sports law. So if anybody wants to be a sports lawyer, I'm on the board of admissions there. I can help you get into law school to be a sports lawyer if that's what you want to be. But I just wanted to be rich. And believe it or not, oil and gas litigators made way more than sports agents. And so I went to Tulane Law School in New Orleans, learned civil and common law, graduated top of my class. I got a job offer right out of law school for an oil company in Houston, Texas in 1992. It's probably older than your dad's and mom's. In 1992, you weren't born yet. In 1992, for $150,000 plus bonus as a lawyer. But my law professor also turned me in 1992 onto this thing called the internet. Anyone ever hear of that? A lot of people didn't in 1992. And I got offered a job for $250,000 to sell legal research online. Back then, it was 9,600 baud modems, dial-up modems, monochrome screen, DOS, which you probably don't even know what that means. Shit moves slow. That's what it meant. And I told my mom, hey, what should I do? Should I be a real lawyer, oil and gas, or work in the internet? I can make over $100,000 more working in the internet. And my mom said, without blinking, got to be a real lawyer. The internet's a fad. Nobody's ever going to use the internet. You can't do research on the computer. You need books to read. This is same thing people say about crypto today or blockchain, right? Never, no one's ever going to buy a car on the internet. Nobody ever put their credit card. Nobody's ever going to trust the internet. The government's going to turn down, you know, lock down the internet. This is the shit that people said in 92. So I learned a valuable lesson the day I chose to work in the internet. I said, just because my mom loves me doesn't mean she always gives me good advice. Now, I listen to my mom still today, and I appreciate every piece of advice that she gives me, but I treat it like a handful of sand. She gives me a piece of advice. I'm grateful for all the sand she has given me, but if it's not resonating with me, if she doesn't know what the F she's talking about because she doesn't know anything about business because she's a second grade teacher, I just let it fall through my hand like a handful of sand. But when she tells me something valuable, like be kind to your future self, do good deeds, I hold on to that. So just because someone loves you, appreciate the fact that they love you, but you don't have to listen to their advice. You don't have to be resistant and say, oh, dad, you're stupid. That's what my kids tell me. They could at least just say, thank you for your stupid advice. See, the problem with parents is a problem I see with social media. Is there's two types of people in the world, ignorant people that don't know what they don't know, and ignorant people that don't know what they don't know. There's ignorant, humble people that have learned the lessons I've learned that will tell you, hey, I don't know what I don't know, but here's what I think, or this is the experiences I've had. Take it for what it is and utilize it to get you to where you want to be or better. Or there's ignorant, arrogant people. They know they don't know, but they're so afraid that they don't know, so they'll just pretend like they do, or they'll attack you like they do. I see that on my Instagram all the time. Someone told me on my Instagram, it was one of my favorite ignorant, arrogant things ever. You stole gratitude from Gary Vee. And they're like super angry. I was like, first of all, I am so much older than Gary Vee. So I'm not stealing gratitude. Plus I learned gratitude from my grandma and I was like three. He wasn't even born. It's just, but because he was attacking me, it took me minutes and moments to get back to center. I actually got mad and then I realized just another ignorant, arrogant person. It's obvious. It's not going to bother me. But the most dangerous, ignorant, arrogant people in your life, the ones that will cost you the most, are the people who love you the most. And let me tell you why. Like my mom. Because when they give you advice, they're going to give it out of fear. Why? Because they love you so much. They're more afraid for you than you are for yourself. So they're going to tell you, doctor, lawyer, failure. They're going to tell you, you can't do this. You should do this. Not because they don't love you. Not because they don't think it's good advice. But more importantly, the only reason they're telling you that advice is because they're afraid that you actually might get hurt. That you might make a mistake. That you might actually learn something and grow. I know this because I told myself when I become a parent, I have four kids, 25, 23, and 20-year-old daughters, and a 14-year-old son, all from the same wife, who went to Patrick Henry as well, who hated me until I was like 26. Never dated me for good reasons. I threw an egg at her when I was 12, because she wouldn't go out with me. But at least I'm the first and the last boy to ever ask her to go steady. That means date, go steady, sorry, I'm old.
Imagine starting a small business, your first customer, your first hire, your first real paycheck. It's an exciting time, but also a little scary. That's where JustWorks comes in. As an all-in-one platform JustWorks supports small business growth by providing seamless tools for benefits, payroll, HR, and compliance, all with transparent pricing. Running payroll is now painless. You can complete it in 90 seconds or less and automate payments. So it's as simple as set it and forget it. In 2023 alone, JustWorks processed over 25.6 billion in trusted payroll for its customers. And you won't have to worry about paperwork. They handle payroll, tax documents, and reporting to ensure compliance. Visit justworks.com/podcast to join thousands of small businesses that trust JustWorks to manage payroll, benefits, compliance, and more. That's justworks.com/podcast.
Whether you're a first-time wine drinker or a wine aficionado, Justin has a wine for every celebration and occasion. Since 1981, Justin has been producing world-class Perdot-style wines from Paso Robles on California's Central Coast. The Justin team believes that the wine should be exceptional from every angle, which is why their team uses boutique winemaking practices like hand harvesting and hand sorting. With a rich history of accolades, Justin produces exceptional wines and is proud to be America's number one luxury Cabernet. Enjoy exceptional wines all season long with Justin. Whether it's for seasonal celebrations, festive dinner parties, or gift exchanges, Justin Wine is sure to make your holidays memorable. Pick up Justin Wine today at a store near you. Visit justinwine.com and enter Playbook 20 for 20% off your order. Justin offers the perfect holiday gifts for clients, colleagues, friends, or family. Be sure to check them out at justinwine.com to receive 20% off your order for a limited time.
Anyway, I took that job 9 months out of law school. I was a millionaire, bought my mom a house and a car. 3 years later, in 1995, we sold the business for $3.4 billion in 1995. That was a lot of money in 1995. Changed my whole life. I decided that I don't need to sell legal research. I went up to the Silicon Valley and learned venture capital. So I'm constantly not worried about a title. I'm not worried about a degree. What am I always doing? I'm just developing the skills, the knowledge of who and what, but continually using my desire to create a delta in my life. I'm constantly expanding my imagination, my own self-image. When everyone's like, why would you leave? You're the youngest executive of a $3.4 billion company. Thomson Reuters bought me, offered me everything to be the executive vice president of sales, 7,000 salespeople under me. I'm in my 20s. Why would you leave? Because I was developing my skills, my knowledge of who and what, and continually utilizing the same desire that created a delta for me in football, for example. You see, your skills and knowledge that you're born with, you have a genetic and an energetic inheritance, right? We understand that. You are born with this genetic and energetic, and you want to align your genetic and energetic inheritance to the highest basement that you can. So in the quarterback factory that I ran at Lee Steinberg, the biggest and 8 first picks in the draft, the biggest names in sports, we knew that a quarterback, the skills and knowledge of a quarterback was their basement. So Jeff George, who we represented, or Ryan Leaf, they had very high basements. In fact, Lee, who knows a lot more about football than I even did, he always said Jeff George and Ryan Leaf had a higher basement than Warren Moon, Steve Young, and Troy Aikman. A higher basement. They just didn't have the delta. Nobody had more desire than my business partner, Warren Moon. I don't know. A lot of people may not even know who Warren Moon is. Let me tell you who Warren Moon was. In 1978, Warren Moon was a 16.5-point underdog, played for Washington, University of Washington, against Michigan, the number one team in the country. And he's also one of the only black quarterbacks in 1978, and he beat Michigan. Michigan quarterback wouldn't even meet him at Disneyland before the game, traditionally right there at the front with all the flowers, because he was black. This is just 1978. I'm already 10 years old. That's my business partner. They said, you can play wide receiver for us, you can play defensive back for us, but you can't play quarterback because you're black. They said it in different words, but that's what they said. And so he went to Canada for 6 years. not just Canada, Edmonton. So it wasn't Vancouver, wasn't Toronto, freaking Edmonton. And he won 5 Grey Cups and 6 MVPs in 6 years until finally they let him play football in the NFL. He played 17 more years, and he's still the only black quarterback in the Hall of Fame. That's Delta. That's Delta. So you got to have this desire, and you can't be afraid of titles, of positions, of locations, of industries, jobs, and careers. All I care about is developing my skills, my knowledge of who and what, and continually growing my desire, because I always have the desire that I must be what I can be. But as I got older, I started learning where my higher basements was. It wasn't in basketball. It wasn't in football. No matter how much I practice in football, my Delta was never going to be higher than most people's basement in the NFL. But my Delta was huge. I just genetically and energetically didn't inherit the gifts of Warren Moon, Troy Aikman, or Steve Young, Jeff George, Lennox Lewis, Evander Holyfield, or what they did, or whoever else, Sabathia, Ramirez, you name it, we had it. And so I went to the Silicon Valley. I worked in the middleware space, raised hundreds of millions of dollars. I learned venture capital, and I was really good at it, raising money. It's a gift. If you can raise money, you'll never starve, by the way. It's a great gift. People always pay you to raise money. Good times, bad times especially. You can make a ton of money if you know how to raise money. Venture capital, I learned that. And I eventually, in 1999, at 31 years old, became the CEO of Samsung's first data division, their first data device. They didn't call them smartphones. It was a Windows device. There's Windows CE. There's no Apple, no iPhone. We thought, or at least I thought, I'd be a billionaire at that time in 1999. Married my dream girl from the fourth grade here in San Diego. Had 3 beautiful children, running the most second largest manufacturer of phones. And then they fire me, because we've become the second largest manufacturer of phones. And I'm a young 30-something-year-old sales guy who worked his way up with great sales skills, but not CEO skills. And so they paid me to leave. Let me just tell you this. If you're going to be fired, get paid. It takes away the pain. I then became the president of the data division for a Finnish telecom called Telus. And before I took that job, I went to help another friend from San Diego with a reality show called Showtime with Magic Johnson. And the other lawyer in the deal, I told my friend, I'm not even a real lawyer, but I'll help you. He's like, you're the best negotiator I know, was Lee Steinberg, the guy they made the movie Jerry Maguire about. And in 48 hours, Lee Steinberg hired me over thousands of other people that wanted to run that sports agency. Question is, why did Lee Steinberg hire me? I wasn't a sports agent. I wasn't a very good lawyer. Why did he hire me? Because he saw the future in sports, in venture, in technology. And nobody had a higher basement than me. Better skills, better knowledge of who and what, and more desire in venture capital, in technology, and yet understood sports and had a law degree. Are you seeing the picture of how most people fail? It's because they're so worried about titles. They're so worried about industry jobs and careers, they forget to focus in on what gives you more opportunities, options, and touches of favor, developing your skills, your knowledge, and your desire. The more skills you have, the more knowledge you have of who and what, and the more desire you have, the more options, opportunities, and touches of favor will come in your life. Now, I had one problem as I started working for Lee. Not only was I worth over $100 million, but I had access to what billionaires couldn't afford to have. And I was young. And I believed my own bullshit. And I thought that money bought love and happiness, because it did for me. Until one day, my dad sent me a birthday present. Now, my dad left when I was 5. He was my hero until I was 10. My dad cheated on my mom. He was a liar, manipulator. His girlfriend was closer to my age than me. I mean, to my age than his. And at 30, he gave me a birthday present. And I was super excited because I hadn't talked to my dad since he forgot my birthday at 10. And I asked him, how could you forget my birthday? Didn't hurt my feelings as bad that he forgot my birthday as when he lied to me and said, I just don't believe in birthdays. It's like 10 years old. I'm like, dude, you celebrate all my siblings' birthdays. You celebrate your girlfriend's birthday. All of a sudden, you don't believe in birthdays? No, you forgot my birthday, you lying son of a... So I told my dad at 10 I hated him. By the time I was in my 30th birthday, he sent me my first birthday present in 20 years. Open it up. started to cry because it was a beautiful blazer jacket. My wife is there with me, and she said, "Why are you crying?" I go, "My dad finally gets it. He wants a relationship with me. He apologized to me." And then I opened up the jacket to see if it said "especially made for my son" because it fit perfectly, or if it said "Armani." But he didn't. He tore out all the pockets in the jacket. I went from complete happiness to rage. I called him immediately. I'm like, "Dad, I got your present." "Oh, thank God, son." I go, "But why would you give me a jacket I can't wear?" He goes, "It's not for wearing. It's to remind you you're just like me. You think money will buy you everything. It'll buy you love and happiness. Hang it in your closet to remind you every day that you can't buy happiness and love. You can't take anything with you when you die. There's no U-Hauls in heaven." I wasn't ready to hear that at 30, so I told my dad, "F you. I hate you. You're a liar, a cheater, manipulator, overseller, back-end seller." Hung up on him. 6 years later, I'm running Lee Steinberg, have everything in the world. My best friend, Rob, who also went to Patrick Henry, who also asked my wife for me at sixth grade camp, Camp Kuiamaka, to go study with me, and then made fun of me because she said no. That's why I threw the egg at her. So I invited Rob to go to the Masters with me. We had a NetJet deal with Warren Moon, Joe Montana, and Wayne Gretzky, and back cabins with Curtis Strange. I was like super excited. Rob was a big golfer. I'm like, "Hey man, come with me to the Masters. I got all this stuff, blah, blah, blah." And he looks at me, he goes, "I'm not going." I'm like, "I'm paying for everything, bro. You're coming." He's like, "I'm not coming." I go, "Why?" He said, "Because I don't like who you hang out with and I don't like with what you're doing." I said, "Rob, I'm not doing what those other guys are doing. You got to come with me." He's like, "Dave, you can lie to me, but stop lying to yourself. You're going to end up dead." I told him, "F you. I hate you. How dare you? You're not my real friend." 2 weeks later, my life would change forever. I learned the greatest lesson in my entire life. I represented also a guy named Little John. Anyone ever hear of the rapper Little John? Yeah. So John invited me to the Grammy Awards. He had won, been nominated. Didn't know he won yet. So I told my wife, we lived in Rancho Santa Fe now. I had three daughters. Would she like to come with me? And she said, "Dave, you shouldn't go. I'm worried about you. You're not paying attention to work. You're not paying attention to your family. And you're partying way too much. I'm really worried about you. Just stay at home. I don't have a good feeling about this." So of course I lied to her, changed my clothes in the car, told her I had a business meeting in Orange County, went to the Grammy Awards with Little John, came home at 5:30 in the morning, completely wasted. Some of you may know what that means. Not my proudest moment. When I got home at 5:30 in the morning, my wife was waiting for me to tell me she was leaving. Told me she wasn't happy, told me I better take stock in who I was and what I wanted to become, or I was going to die, and she didn't want to be around to watch it. At that time, the same way as when my mom told me I was lost, the same way my dad told me I needed to remember you can't take anything with you, the same way Rob told me that I wasn't hanging around the right people and doing the right things, I told my wife the same thing, "F you." I actually said, "How dare you talk to me this way? Do you know who did all of this?" That's exactly what I said. And then I went to bed. Woke up in the morning full of hate. I hated my mom, my dad, my best friend, and my wife. I was going to figure out how I could take all their money, everything I ever gave them. I was going to steal their happiness because money buys happiness. Money buys love. I was going to take everything away from them. And as I was sitting on the end of the bed, thinking about what lawyer I was going to utilize to do all of this, I looked over in my closet and I hadn't seen it for years. It was that jacket. It was my calling. I looked at the jacket. I thought to myself, "Man, I don't hate my mom. Don't hate my dad. I don't hate my best friend, and I certainly don't hate my wife. I hated myself. I was worth over $100 million. I could buy whatever I wanted. I have the three most beautiful girls in the world, healthy, happy. I live in Rancho Santa Fe. Planes, trains, cars, boats, anything I wanted. And I hated myself because I was the liar, the cheater, the manipulator, the overseller, and the back-end seller. So I sat there all day and I took stock in who I was. Those values that we talk about, gratitude, forgiveness, accountability, inspiration. I started to look at my life and I started to change. And thank God my wife stayed with me and I rebuilt my life where it is today. 2 years into that journey, that transformation, I went bankrupt in 2008. I lost everything, over $100 million.
But it wasn't the worst time. The worst time was that night that I came home and almost lost everything. The most important day of my life was when I lost everything and had to go to my mom's house to tell her I was bankrupt. It wasn't just the fact that I could go to my mom and tell her I was bankrupt, but it was what occurred when I did, because not only did I have to tell her I was bankrupt, the only reason I ever wanted to be rich was to give her that house. And I had to tell her she was moving because I didn't take my name off of the title of the house. So she was going to be evicted. The house was lost. So I knocked on the door. The minute she came to the door, I started to cry. She's like, oh my God, are you okay? Are the girls okay? Is Julie okay? Yeah, yeah. Well, what's the matter? I said, Mom, I lost everything. Oh my gosh, do you need anything? No, no, no. Mom, I lost your house too. You're going to have to move. Oh, are you okay? I'm like, Mom, I don't think you heard me. I lost your house. You have to move. Do you need some money? Mom, listen, honey, I heard you. Do you need anything? I said, Mom, why am I being punished? I said, I've done everything I was supposed to do. I've been working really hard. I stopped drinking, using drugs. I've stopped. Why now am I being punished? I told her, I don't believe in God. She smiled at me. She said, oh, no, no, no. You believe in God. You just believe in the wrong God. You're protected, you're promoted, and you're loved and perfected by this. I can't wait to see what you do next. There's two things in my life that will shorten that distance of resistance that we create by allowing what other people think to determine what we do. It's an energy gap. It's wisdom, surrounding yourself with the right people, the right ideas, the skills, the knowledge, and the desire derived by the right people and the right ideas. And two, faith. Faith there's something bigger than you that loves you, protects you, promotes you, and perfects you more than your mom. And that's how I've lived my life ever since. I've been able to make more money than I ever have, help more people than I ever have, and have more fun than I've ever had. And I am here not just to teach you to think about and to change the way you look at things so the things you look at change, but to help you. I am here, whatever I can do, whatever you want to be. I come here almost every year, except for COVID, I think, to tell you to develop your skills, to develop your knowledge of who and what, and to grow that desire, to use wisdom and faith.